This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, a new effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. To find out more, go to tryzonanow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman and you'll get a $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662. Or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and here we are with one of my favorite guests. She's a perennial contributor here on Intelligent Medicine. She's Dr. Lise Alschuler. Dr. Lise, as often referred to by her patients, is a naturopathic doctor who's quite unique because she has achieved board certification in the field of oncology. She is someone who has focused her practice on the natural support of cancer patients. And so she's an expert on what supplements to use, on the effects of diet. She also is here in her capacity as executive director of TAP Integrative. And this podcast, to some extent, will be an unashamed plug for TAP. TAP, we'll explain, is a place to go for health professionals, but also aficionados of natural medicine to learn more about a wide host of issues. So without further ado, here's Dr. Lise. Lise, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
Well, the pleasure is mine as usual. I love being on your show. I'm still in your fan club, so that's good. And in fact, so much so that I was able to convince you, despite all your busyness, to be one of our TAP experts, which we'll explain, I'm sure. But and your topic is delightful. Refer to it often, so thank you.
Indeed, yeah. So, first of all, tell us what TAP is and what you're trying to achieve. It's billed as a nonprofit educational resource for integrative practitioners. Now, you know, you may say, well, why are we talking about TAP with a bunch of, you know, just lay audience members? You know, we have lots and lots of subscribers to Intelligent Medicine. We had over 160,000 downloads last month, and I'd like to think that among them are some health practitioners. They like to, you know, sometimes catch up on guests and find out what's going on with various aspects of natural medicine. We have specialty topics, and they kind of want to keep up with the news. And then, of course, we have sort of, I would classify them as sort of wonky lay people who really delve into this. They're like the barefoot doctors out there. They help friends and family stay well. And they really want it. They're very, very into this. So what does TAP offer to them, and why should people turn to TAP for the latest updates?
Yeah, and, you know, that's a great introduction. And if I could, before I dive into the details of TAP, let me just say that for practitioners out there, this is, in my opinion, and I'm biased, clearly, but it's kind of a no-brainer as far as why they would want to belong. For the non-healthcare practitioners, I think there's still a lot to be had here. So we do, most of the content is protected behind membership, but there is one section which we call Trending on TAP, and this is a series of very short and easy-to-read summaries of recent research studies within the realm of integrative medicine, and we feature one of those every week, which we send out in a newsletter, and anybody can become a recipient of that newsletter. So it's a very nice way for people, even who are not practitioners, to stay up to date with at least one interesting study in the realm of integrative healthcare. So that's one advantage. The other thing I would say is, you know, I hear this, I'm sure you do as well, but sometimes my patients will come to me, especially since they are seeking integrative oncology care from me, they may have other practitioner types, and they say, you know, I'd really like my doctor to get more familiar with integrative care. Or, gosh, I wish there was someplace I could send him or her. So this would be another way to kind of share a resource.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting idea because there, you know, I think you can divide physicians into several categories. There's some doctors who no way, no how are they going to embrace this. In fact, they're down on it. They're, you know, they right. say, you know, what you're not up on, you may be down on. So there's, you know, they poo-poo it. Then there's some practitioners who embrace it, you know, like yours truly, and of course, yourself. And then in between are the practitioners who say, gee, you know, the demands of medicine are such that, I just don't have time to keep up with all that stuff. My patients bombard me with questions, and I, quite honestly, I draw a blank. I don't know what to tell them because I don't know where to look. They don't teach us in medical school. They don't teach us in the, you know, at the medical conferences that I have to go to maintain my CME and whatever it is, gastroenterology or cardiology. But they want a quick resource where maybe they can catch up on some of the latest developments that your patients know more about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And one of the things that we've tried to do with TEP is to organize it in a way that's it's all oriented to the clinician. So, you know, because the other thing is you and I are swimming upstream in this immense flow of information. I mean, there's just so much data that's being published, it's impossible to keep up. So knowing, you know, we throw the towel in a bit on that, but we do still want to try to at least keep ourselves informed, just, you know, figure out what our colleagues are doing that works. We want to find information that's trustworthy so there's some evidence behind it in terms of research studies. So everything on TAP is peer-reviewed. It's all checked against the evidence base, but it comes from expert clinicians, and it's organized by clinical topic. So, for example, we might have a clinical topic on inflammatory bowel disease with Dr. Ron.
Gee, that sounds really familiar. That seems at one point or another I did something around that.
Yes, you did. And what we do is we tap into your clinical practice. What have you found that works, and what do you think would be valuable to share with other practitioners? And then from that, we generate different, different what we call features or ways to present that information, and we try to present it in a way that practitioners can come, and really in a fairly short period of time, they can kind of dive into your head and swim around in there, see what's going on with your thought process around inflammatory bowel disease, and come away with some really good clinical pearls, some strategies, some ways, new ways they can help their patients. There's, you know, resources that they can continue to, if they have more time, they can continue their own investigation and learn more. But it's definitely oriented towards clinical practice. Nothing on this site is sort of theoretical. Huh, I wonder if this would work. Would this be interesting. It's all very pragmatic.
Indeed. And, you know, so sometimes when I talk to, you know, I'll go to an affair, you know, a wedding or bar mitzvah, and, you know, doctors tend to talk to one another. And, you know, my colleagues in the conventional medical world are kind of curious. They say, well, you know, I'm very interested in that stuff, but, you know, is there any real evidence that it works? Are there studies? Right. Is there research? And, of course, my answer is yes, there's an enormous amount of really high quality research. There's medical journals. There's, you know, wonderful, resources, but they simply, you know, are not aggregated in a way that is accessible. So how would you reply to that critique of natural medicine?
Oh yeah. I mean the same, absolutely the same. And I think it's really just, it's like an ever coming avalanche in terms of information. So for the clinician who literally is trying to digest and come away with some interesting and important and relevant ways to address something, and if it's new, so it's new to them from an integrative perspective, they're trying to dip into this avalanche and pull out some kind of nugget that's relevant to them, it's really hard to do. So I think as practitioners, we have to rely on some other third-party aggregator of information. So, you know, from my perspective, I would say to those docs, look, you know, there's definitely a lot of data out there, and I can say that, and you're probably still not going to go out into the vast sea of published literature and try to prove me right or wrong. So I try to steer them towards services that have already done some of that homework for them. You know, I think going all the way from your radio show and other radio shows that bring up latest research and commentary to sites like TAP. We're organized by clinical topic. We, you know, certainly take not only that clinician's perspective, but we do summarize recent research, and we give people references that are linked into the abstract. So it just kind of helps organize it. I think that's a big piece of helping kind of practitioners, especially those that are new to this, get their footing when they're diving in and trying to understand where the evidence is.
And it's nicely formatted because, you know, we spend a lot of time reading, and okay, there are certainly written resources at TAP, but a lot of it is on video. It's kind of like, you know, when I sat down with you to talk about ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, it's a little bit like the Charlie Rose show. You know, it's kind of comfortable studio, you know, swivel chairs, and, you know, just like, you know, having a conversation, but, you know, at a level where, you know, it's like you can eavesdrop on a conversation, among experts and, you know, really get a sense of the way they think. And you,
right,
you
and
have,
that's key.
And right. You've curated some of the really top experts in various fields.
And I jumped all over that because yep. The way you think is a key thing. You know, part of this too is it's, there's information that you can read, but then it's really, well, how does Dr. Hoffman think when he's has a patient in his office and he's making his treatment decisions? So that's also what we're trying to convey, and the video is great. That's actually some of those little short clips. We take little excerpts from those videos, and those are also available to the public.
Oh, good.
And if they go into YouTube and just search TAP space integrative, so TAP integrative, they'll find a whole plethora of short little clips from all of our experts. So those are nice little tips as well. Yeah, and we have a lot of really wonderful experts that have been on our TAP site, you know, and we have a lot of topics, too. We're now up to 34 clinical topics, and we actually just recently, by the way, we have been able to offer naturopathic continuing education credits for a while, and we just were recently approved for our first nine topics, our Category 1 CME approved, which is great because that's the continuing education that physicians and nurse practitioners, nurses, physician assistants need, so they can get that in integrative medicine on TAP.
And that's really great because for a listening audience, for doctors to remain qualified, and it varies from state to state and profession to profession, they have to get what's called CME, continuing medical education, which is to the good because, you know, you don't want, your doctor, to fall behind. So, and it may be for a nurse practitioner, it may be for a nurse, or it may be for even nutritionists, I think, require some CME. Certainly MDs and DOs do. And I'm not sure, and chiropractors do as well. I believe my chiropractor said I won't be in next week.
Do. Yep, y'all.
Yeah, he
yep.
said I won't be in next week. I have to take my CME. So to offer them this as, where it's actually, it really incentivizes them to access the information because it's not, you know, it qualifies them to continue practicing. Good stuff. So,
yeah.
Of interest to me, recently, your most recent topic was kind of a hot topic. It
yeah.
was fecal, transplants.
Mm-hmm.
So tell,
yeah,
wait,
fecal
tell us.
Microbiota transplantation. This has ick factor written all over
yes,
it, right? We're talking
right.
about poop. And
yeah.
helping us really get comfortable with this topic is just a fabulous individual named Mark Davis. He's a naturopathic
yeah.
doctor. He's been heavily involved in this.
Out on the West Coast, right? He's.
Yep. And he sits on the sort of national, I don't know if it's a commission or association that mm-hmm. that is working with the government and regulation around fecal microbiota transplantation, or FMT. But, you know, really what this is about is it's based on this idea that we all carry around our own microbiome, which is a very diverse collection of bacteria that reside all over our body, but primarily in our digestive tract in the case of FMT. And originally this whole field developed when there was the discovery that people with an infection called Clostridium difficile, or C. diff, as people often refer to it, which can be acquired, actually, surprisingly, pretty easily, but certainly people who are hospitalized are at risk for this. It can cause intractable diarrhea, and there's a population of patients that can become resistant to the typical antibiotic therapy, mm-hmm. and they can get recurrent C. diff. And so it's been determined that fecal microbial transplantation, or FMT, is actually one of the most, if not the most, like the efficacy rate is at 99% or some crazy
That's just
thing.
Fantastic. Yeah, just it parenthetically, folks, this is where this treatment actually trumps conventional treatment. Excuse me, that word, unfortunately, is going to go out of the lexicon, but I still have to use it. When antibiotics fail, this treatment actually cures patients with this terrible wasting diarrhea that can, it's not just debilitating, it can be fatal because you, you just, it just persists and persists and you waste away.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's been a whole, since its discovery, an evolution of the practice and, you know, determining who a healthy donor is, because essentially what happens is they take the stool from a healthy donor, and most of our stool is full of bacteria, so that's actually the bulk of it, and they sort of purify it to large extent so that what they get out of that is just the bacteria. And as the expert Dr. Davis says, instead of taking probiotics where you're sort of feeding the, you know, almost a drip of bacteria into this ecosystem, this is a total reboot. This is like rebooting your computer altogether and dumping a whole new colonization in there. And it's pretty remarkable. So what's interesting, too, is that there right now there's a lot of regulations around how it can be used and how it can't be used, who can administer it. But there is some ways that people can self-administer with the guidance of a practitioner. And in that situation, there's some incredible and very interesting applications for inflammatory bowel disease, even for irritable bowel disease, for eczema, for, you know, conditions that seem unrelated to the gut. So fascinating area of discovery, and I think really something that will be part of, like a core part, I'm predicting, of integrated medicine at some point in the future.
Now, lest we think that this is ready for prime time and, you know, we have people listening to this podcast immediately, you know, attempting to, whatever, you know, access this from a relative or, you know, somehow getting a hold of some of this stuff. And, you know, it's easy to go to the drugstore and get an enema bag and boom, there you go. There are potential hazards and downsides, as you, in a balanced way, point out. In your TAP integrative feature on this, and what are some of those? Because it's not quite perfected to an exact science yet, right?
Right. Yeah. There's definitely lots of development. So, you know, there's clearly the key is to make sure the donor is healthy. So the donors have to be screened, and so that you're not inadvertently taking on something that could cause disease. That's the biggest hazard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some issues with how it's administered. So traditionally, or when it, you know, at its inception, it was a very invasive procedure. It involved going under anesthesia, light anesthesia, and there
endoscopy,
was, you know, an AG tube
it had to,
put
right.
in, and yeah. And now they're kind of thinking, well, that's not very practical. So there's a lot of development around preserving the microbial component of a healthy donor's stool, freezing it, and then being able to encapsulate it. That's, I think, a really interesting way to go. But how you store that to make sure that there's no degradation also could become a hazard. So, I mean, clearly this is not something that somebody just, you know, jerry-rigs and does on their own. This needs to be done under the supervision of somebody who's, you know, really familiar with the procedure.
And there's a case report in the New England Journal of Medicine that I came across of a guy with ulcerative colitis who was, yeah, kind of doing okay, wasn't doing great, but he was under control. He was taking medications. And then he showed up with a rip-roaring case of worsening, you know, an exacerbation of his ulcerative colitis. And they asked him some questions. He said, oh, by the way, I took a home brew fecal transfer. And they said, well, where'd you know, who were the donors? He says, well, my wife and my child. And so they tested the wife and the child. Turned out the child had cytomegalovirus, which in kids sometimes you can carry it without seeming sick. That virus is actually sometimes implicated in ulcerative colitis. And so this was a, you know, case report which showed that what essentially, I mean, it's like, you know, who could be healthier than my very own, you know, wife and child? And he inadvertently did himself in. So what constitutes a healthy donor? That's the loaded word, a healthy donor. What are the criteria for that?
Yeah, you know, it's such an interesting question because I've asked myself that too. And there's so there are now stool banks.
Yes.
Collect. The stool from healthy donors. So they screen them for
and they pay
virus.
They pay the donors.
And they pay the donors.
Great
right.
way to make a living.
So, I mean, clearly healthy donors are people with no known history of, you know, serious illnesses, including cancer, autoimmune disease, viral infections. They screen the stool for viral infections, both latent or infections that people wouldn't necessarily know they mm-hmm. have, as well as for infections that would be symptomatic. And I think that's kind of the gist of it. So it's really getting to know their history, their medical history, and then just doing a lot of testing on the stool.
Right. And there's also this issue, which is kind of weird, which is the donors have to be of normal weight because mm-hmm. you can catch obesity, it turns out.
Yeah.
Right? And there have actually been some cases where people have been really upset. They were wasting away. They were 97 pounds. They were, you know, at death's door. They took a fecal transplant. All of a sudden, they were cured. But inadvertently, it created a susceptibility to gain weight. What's up mm-hmm. with that?
Yeah. You know, well, this is just one of those areas where we're just beginning to understand how influential the bacteria that we carry around are on who we are. And that actually is being exploited to the opposite, too. There's some work that's being done not only on fecal microbial transplantation, but trying to identify the actual bacterial strains, putting those into a probiotic, and giving those as an obesity treatment.
Yes.
So the idea being to try to, you know, induce. So there's a communication that happens between the microbes in our gut and our immune system, which translates into our inflammation levels, how we handle blood sugar, even our metabolism. There's even some thought that there's some genetic transfer that happens, and all of that over time clearly can influence things ranging from mood to weight to inflammatory processes.
Possibly as a treatment for depression, even, you know. For,
yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, okay, so this is just a little tidbit to whet your appetite. Excuse the expression in regard to this topic.
Yeah, right.
For TAP, which is, you know, and there's more to TAP than poop. There are a lot of medical conditions, and health issues that are, in the inventory of, broadcasts, that you can access, via TAP. So, we divide these podcasts into two parts, but before we depart from part one, what's the critical information for people to get a hold of TAP?
Yes, so the TAP website, and this would be for both clinicians as well as for general public, would be tapintegrative.org, and you'll get to a page and, again, sign up for the newsletter. That'll at least get you some weekly summaries, and then you can also check us out on YouTube, which is TAP Integrative, and that's two words, TAP Integrative.
Okay, great. All right, for listeners, we divide the podcast into two parts. We'll continue with today's discussion with Lise Alschuler. She is the executive director of TAP Integrative, and that's her subject today. And when we return, we'll talk more about some of the subjects on TAP at TAP. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.